I'm going to read verse 32 again. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. That forgiveness means to bestow favor unconditionally, that I will unconditionally forgive you for what you have done to me. This means that a Christian will always treat the offending party graciously, letting the wrong go without any claim for punishment. And this is a big mouthful. It means pardoning the guilty person instead of displaying resentment or exercising retaliation. Forgiveness is not probation. Can I say that again? Forgiveness is not probation. It's not suspending the sentence under supervision for specific conditions. Forgiveness is not a reprieve. You don't temporarily postpone the punishment. Forgiveness results in complete reconciliation and restored fellowship. And God's example, forgiveness is free, full, and final. When God forgives, He forgets.
Yeah. Would you say what you said after forgiveness is?
Okay.
Complete restoration, is that what you said?
Forgiveness is not probation.
Yeah, I got that.
Okay. Then forgiveness is not reprieve, not temporarily postponing punishment. Forgiveness results in complete reconciliation and restored fellowship. I read this morning again, preparing to come before you, and I wept. And I said, God, I need you to rework me in this area, okay? Now, we're going to talk a little bit about anger. Anger has many faces, but there are only three reasons for anger, and some of you in this room know these three reasons, but I'm going to repeat them because we need to be reminded, and a lot of you do not know the reasons for anger. Anytime we feel angry, there's only three reasons for that. Number one, hurt feelings. Number two, fear. Number three, frustration or loss of control. Those are the only reasons for anger. Let me repeat them. Hurt feelings, fear, frustration, or loss of control. So when people come into my office, their face is all red, and they're huffing and they're puffing, and they sit down, and I say to them, how are you today? I'm fine. I know they're not fine. I know they're angry, and I know that I need to find out why they're angry. Okay? One of the things we're going to learn how to do is to learn how to diagnose our anger. Where did it come from? Why am I so angry? Why does it have so many faces? I didn't know that was anger. Let me read you a little illustration here. This is so typical, it could have been in any one of our homes, okay? Dale tried to keep it all in, and so far he had succeeded. Sally's request to drive Joey to school became, because of the rain, had made him 10 minutes late for work. Dale wanted to tell her off, but he had no time that morning. He arrived to learn he had meetings until lunch. Lunch itself was interrupted when his boss gave him a must-do 5 minutes ago task. On the way home, the car sputtered and stopped on the road. Fortunately, he was only one block from the service station. Unfortunately, impatient rush hour drivers honked and were rude as he and another driver tried to push his Ford to the side and up a long driveway. Honey, the car is being repaired, he told his wife in a phone call a half hour later. Dale sounded surprisingly calm, but inside he was seething. With measured tones, he said, I hope to be home in another 30 minutes once they put a new fuel pump in. Gotta go now. Sally could not see Dale slamming down the receiver. Wow, $210 for a fuel pump? We can't afford that, Dale's thoughts sped on. And now she wants me to pick up milk for supper. She thinks I have a little free time. Well, I might as well get me a candy bar. But Dale forgot to shop. When he arrived home, Sally greeted him innocently. Honey, I'm so glad you're home. Did you get the milk? Dale exploded. He came on like a heat-seeking missile. There was no warning, no alarms sounded, everything had been calm, and when that missile exploded, Sally and little Joey, on the blast receiving end, were devastated, not only by the suddenness, but by the intensity of the blast. The damage included wounded feelings and faltering esteem. The recovery from this onslaught took days. The missile, intense, unexpected, and uncalled for anger. What was the problem here? It wasn't the job, although that intensified him. It wasn't the car breaking down, although that intensified him. It was not the shopping that he forgot, although that intensified him to the explosion point. What was the real reason for his anger that day? She asked him to take the little boy to school and it would make him late for work. What was he thinking inside his mind? He was thinking, it's more important to take my son to school than for the breadwinner of the house to go on and do his duty to provide for his family. Why couldn't my wife drive him to school or catch a ride? You know, and there she had put her son above her husband. Now, she didn't mean to do this. That wasn't her intention. But that's how he interpreted it. And it came out as a total explosion at the end of the day because it had been building and building. And I bet if you talked to that husband, you would find out that that wife does that very often.
Usurping his authority.
And diminishing his responsibility in the eyes of his son. Okay? Now, there is another kind of anger here. On other occasions, anger is like a snake. It's not explosive. It glides gently and silently through the underbrush. I know the little comical things are going to come to your mind as I'm giving examples here, but even though they're humorous, the Lord is bringing them to your mind, and you need to kind of maybe make a little note of this. And the snake may just rise up his head, promising commitment, but then disappears once more. It's promise forgotten. Or the anger may slink by as a costly delay by someone who is full of weak excuses. People that give excuse after excuse after excuse, that is a symptom for anger. Sometimes a withdrawing partner says, I do love you, honey. You know I love you. And then retreats into silence every time you bring up an important issue. The bite of this anger is not as blatant or as devastating as the missile. Results are the same. Okay, what is anger? It's so controversial. Exactly, what is it? It affects all of us. We all feel it. On your sheet there, one of the verses says, be angry and sin not. And everybody thinks anger is a sin. Be angry and sin not. What does that mean? Even the experts don't agree. Some say experience anger, express anger. Some experts say disown anger, repel it. But it's with us. We were created with a capacity to become angry. But what do we do with this? One dictionary explanation of anger, I think, is the best I've ever heard. It says, a feeling of strong displeasure. This suggests that anger is manageable. Aha, now that is the key word, manageable. It is like so many other feelings. It's neither right or wrong in itself. The problem lies in the mishandling of the feeling. But anger wears many faces, and I hope to enlighten you on what these are. Now let's look back in the Bible. Moses had a little, couple times of, he blew his cool. But one time when Moses was livid with anger at the Hebrew people was when they set up false idols to worship. He was totally ticked. Okay, so what happened? With that energy provided by his anger, he was able to regain control of the people. So he took that angry feeling and he channeled it into a positive direction. How many know how much energy you can get when you're angry? I mean, women, you can clean your house in 30 minutes. I mean, this is a thorough job. You go in and slam doors, and boy, you're just really racing, you know? And normally it takes me a little bit longer than 30 minutes, but if my husband leaves and comes back in 30 minutes and the house is clean, he wants to know who I'm mad at, okay? Because it really gets you that extra adrenaline, okay? David was consumed with anger when Nathan told him about the rich man stealing from the poor man. But he used his anger to face his own pride and to admit his own sin. So that was a positive way. Anger can be used in a creative way to resolve problems, okay? I'm giving you an overview today, and then we're going to get specific about these things. One of the things would be a mother had her young son killed in an automobile accident by a drunk driver. And you go through all the stages of grief, and anger is one of those stages. You know what happened? This mother formed Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, which is a group of people that we are aware of. And she promoted legislation and awareness programs to remove drunk drivers from the national roads. That's what she did with her anger. She wanted to change the law. And she's made a tremendous impact with that. Instead of letting the anger go in a destructive way. Okay? Well, let's talk a little bit about positive anger. Okay? If you're taking notes, this is all under positive anger. Anger can be used positively and creative in many ways. And I'm going to repeat this. Anger is part of the grieving process. And it always follows a loss. When you become angry, intensely angry, it is because of a loss. You either lost rights or pride or a relationship or things. Something was lost in your life. You felt a loss, and anger will be part of that response. Let me give you a few examples here that was put down. There was a relative who had a member of their family killed suddenly in an accident. The hospital chaplain came in, and sometimes you become accustomed to your job, and it's his job to inform people when they have passed away, when their family member has passed away. If you're in a hospital, usually the chaplain, or they will call the minister of your choice to come in and share that with you. But he didn't share it in a very tender, compassionate way. You know, it was just like, well, I'm sorry, but so-and-so has died. And if that is a sudden thing to you, I mean, it just, boom, you hit a brick wall going 9 miles an hour. Well, this relative, when they were going through the angry stage, was angered by this chaplain. And they convinced the hospital chaplain staff to establish new and improved procedures for helping the survivors of sudden accidental deaths. So that was a positive way. There was a parent who proposed that warning signs be posted at a pond where his son drowned to help reduce similar accidents. A grandmother requested that parents of cancer victims be provided with printed information about cancer, as well as the location of support groups. An adult son who lost his elderly father organized programs for a local convalescent home. Now notice the word here, the action, not just the word anger, but the action of their anger, which was channeled into a positive direction. And it brought relief and a sense of control back into their lives when they could do something good and something positive because of their loss. Okay? Destructive anger. I want you to write this down. Anger is a learned behavior. Someone taught you how to be angry. Anger is a learned behavior. Anger can be a positive thing, but anger can be destructive. People seem to go to extremes to demonstrate their anger, inwardly or outwardly. Now listen to this. If you turn outward too much, it destroys others. If you turn anger inward too much, it destroys yourself. Okay, we had a little example of destructive anger in the Bible. It even appeared in the first book of the Bible. We didn't even get out of Genesis, and it was expressed many times. But the first time destructive anger was discussed in the Bible was with Cain. And then there was Esau and Saul and the Pharisees. And there's many destructive expressions of anger in the Bible. Okay? Anger can motivate a person to hate, to wound, to damage, to annihilate, to scorn, to loathe, to curse, to ruin, to demolish. Under the curse of anger, a man will ridicule, get even, laugh at someone, humiliate someone, shame, criticize, bawl out, fight, crush, offend, or bully another person. And all of these are definitely destructive expressions of anger. Anger has its place and can be effective, but usually it's not because we make the wrong choices as how to express it. We become careless with our expression and we override love, care, appreciation, all the things that create close relationships. This one writer put something in here that I just want to read to you. Anger stuns. It frightens. It makes people feel bad about themselves. And of course, it warns them to stop doing whatever is offending you. But people gradually become injured and resistant. As soon as they see you, they put on their emotional armor in preparation for the next upset. The more anger you express, the less effective your anger becomes. The less you are listened to and the more cut off you are, may begin to feel from genuine closeness. And that's demonstrated in the home when mothers yell at their children. After a while, the kids don't even hear you if you are a yeller. If you are prone to real explosions of anger out of control, the people in your family will wear armor. The first few times this happens, you may affect them. Maybe not in a positive way, but you will affect them. But if you continue to do this, they just zip up their armor and they become resistant to whatever you're saying. We know that, don't we? We know that. Okay? Anger erects barriers. Each expression of anger adds, or destructive expression of anger adds to your emotional slush fund. Okay? Now, if you're writing, taking notes, let's talk about the fear of anger. We do fear that, you know. We're afraid of the reaction of others when they witness our anger. Sometimes that is the only reason we don't blow our cool, because we don't know what that person's going to think of us if we do it. We learn to ask ourselves questions like, what right do I have to be angry? What good will my anger do in this situation? And I ask this question a lot of times. Is it worth all the emotional energy that it's going to cost me to show this? And when we ask ourselves these questions and we debate the answers, we end up using it as a gag, completely stifling the anger inside of us. And the basis of that is fear. But the anger doesn't go away. Just because you stifle it today or you keep control of yourself today, the anger does not go away. It's just stored down inside waiting for another outlet. Okay, another thing. We fear other people's anger because we equate emotion with personal rejection. Okay? With personal rejection. We equate the emotion of other people's anger with personal rejection. If I come over here to Elizabeth and I say, Elizabeth, I am so disappointed in you. You absolutely disgust me to the point of vomiting.
That's one of those days.
Elizabeth will feel real rejection the next time she sees me. And every time thereafter. Okay. I used Elizabeth because I knew she could handle this. I've talked to people in my office who say, I can't express my anger because if I let it out, I don't know how to turn it off. You ever felt like that? Every one of us have felt like that. If I let it out, how in the world will I ever turn it off? It's because it's been building and building and building. The problem is that repressing your anger can bring about the very things you're afraid of. Your anger. What happens when you repress anger? This stuff is heavy, but I think it's very needed, okay? What happens when you're angry and you don't let it out? It's inside. What does it do to your insides? Depression. And after depression comes suicidal attempts. You become abrasive with other people. You become sullen. You become a ticking time bomb. And nobody knows where you're going to explode when it's on the inside. We're afraid that our anger will make us look inferior and inadequate. So we learn to bury our anger, to swallow it, to stuff it. We fear anger because we have not been given the truth about anger, nor the assistance and the right way to express it. We will learn in the next few weeks how to practice expressing it properly and to be able to trust ourselves to do that. How to release your anger in a healthy manner so that it will benefit you and benefit those around you. Okay, this is kind of a cutesy thing here, but we're going to take a little inventory of our family. And I'm going to give you little examples of different kinds of how we feel our anger. Our next topic is how we feel our anger. There are various ways in which people feel their anger as well as express it. Now, we're talking about feelings now, and women.
Feelings.
You know, we're into feelings. We can really, you know, Velcro into this thought here. We're going to meet three kinds of angry people. Now, the first one is Sam the slow burner. Okay, I want you to write this down because I'm going to give you some information here. And as I'm giving the slow burner feelings of anger, I want you to identify who that is in your family. And Michelle, please don't call out names. It's supposed to be. And do not point to other people in this room. Okay. I called and read these to my husband, and oh, he was just laughing, and he was just really good until we got to his. And then he got mad. He said, what a way to start my day. Okay. Sam the slow burner rarely feels anger at the time of infraction or the time that something takes place. He rarely feels anger right then. But he goes home and he thinks about it. And the more he thinks about it, the madder he gets. And the feelings begin to intensify, okay? Some of the slow burners, now there are several kinds, some of the slow burners expend their energy in restraining any expression of their anger. Others see anger as a childish feeling and immediately experience guilt. They tend to turn their anger back against themselves. Other slow burners need time and privacy before they begin to feel anger. They have to be in a safe place with people they trust. When it does arrive, they are usually off by themselves and can reflect upon it. At times, Sam, the slow burner, will accumulate a series of upsetting events, one thing after another, and then overreact to some minor event with intense anger. At this point, his anger sails fast and furious, and his response is completely out of proportion to the situation. Sam reacts more to the past than to the present. One of these people in an argument would say, I remember 20 years ago when your mother said this to your aunt, and they go on and on. But it was a present situation that tipped them off, but they're talking about the past. They're way behind. They're 20 years behind. Think of the pressure that must be inside this kind of a person. Who is the slow burner in your family? No names, please. Okay, the next one is Tom Tinderbox. Tinderbox, T-I-N-D-E-R-B-O-X. He feels his anger quick as a flash. Like a quickly igniting match. Slow burners feel the anger slowly. Tinderboxes feel it immediately. Though they refuse to express the anger, keeping it to themselves, some feel it immediately, know why they are angry, but deny themselves the right to feel it. Tom Tinderbox's motto is, adults should always control themselves and be able to handle whatever difficulty arises. Once again, guilt overrides the anger and kills any expression of it. Other Tinderboxes, now they come in categories, know why they are angry and who's to blame. And they feel justified in being angry. These tinderboxes rarely hold back their feelings. Hush. Their main decision is whether to focus their anger on the source or something else. Some tinderboxes are so deeply troubled about how they feel their anger, they cannot figure out the reason for their feelings. They don't know why they're angry. This uncertainty makes their anger a tremendous burden. And even though at times they may be able to identify several causes of their anger, sometimes their anger is released. Other times it remains bottled up. Who is the Tom Tinderbox in your family? Number three, the cool heads. This is a group of individuals that claim they have never experienced anger. In fact, some of them say they can't recall a time when they ever felt angry. The first time I met Carl Coolhead, he was difficult to fathom, but Carl said he does not seem to experience intense feelings of any kind. Some coolheads will say they experience feelings such as embarrassment or annoyance, but definitely not anger. And I know that several families have this kind of person. They generally stuff it. Okay, Now that's how we feel about our anger. Now there are also little people, I'm going to give you definitions. See, you can get a lot more across with humor than if I'm really going to hit this hot and heavy. I mean, you know, you'll enjoy this more if we approach it from the other side of the street. The next label is how we express our anger. Now there's a difference between feeling anger and expressing anger, okay? There are various ways in which we feel our anger. Perhaps the area of greatest concern is how we express it. Number one, Stella straight shooter. Somebody knows who that is in our family already. I haven't even given the definition. Stella straight shooter expresses her anger directly at the source of her irritation. Unfortunately, some members of the straight shooter clan fail to keep their anger directed at the irritating situation or behavior, but go after the actual person. And some of them seem to have no fear of the results. Some straight shooters have simply described what has happened, why it was a problem, why they were angry, and what they would like done about the issue. Very thorough. Some are loud, while others remain quiet and calm. But they are definitely angry. These are the people who tend to get over their anger quickly. Those who use indirect approaches retain their anger and continue to let it live on. Some indirect methods of anger, let me give you this now. I'm giving you a lot to think about. The indirect methods of anger include withdrawal. I'm not talking to you or anybody who represents you, okay? Avoidance, we'll go out the back door of the church rather than walk by that person. And even lack of consideration, you know, total ignorance. Have you ever been in a group where someone's mad at you and they ignore you like you're not even a part of what's going on? Okay? Who is the straight shooter in your family or group of friends? Okay?
It will be a combination.
Yes. And then we're going to break down these four categories. Okay? The next one is Dan Deflector. Expresses his anger in such a way that those involved in causing the feeling don't even know that there's any anger or a situation that would involve anger. The anger is displaced against someone or something often less threatening than the actual source. Who is the deflector in your family? The next one is Karen Keeper. Karen Keeper? Oh, Dan Deflector? Which one?
Dan Deflector.
You want me to repeat that?
Yes.
He expresses his anger in such a way that those involved in causing the feeling don't even know that anger exists. The anger is displaced against someone else or something else, often less threatening than the actual situation.
You mean like if they are angry about a particular thing, and if someone comes in the room and they take it out on that person had nothing to do with it.
Exactly. The deflection. They had to let it out, but they didn't trust themselves to let it out at the actual person. Yeah. Now, Karen Keeper is the next one, the third one. Holds her anger in until she is with people with whom she feels safe. Then she expresses her pent-up feelings. Some keepers are quite selfish with their feelings, where they never share them with others. Others express their anger quite well, but through tears. Their hurt and frustration finds its release through crying, which may elicit sympathy and concern rather than rejection. They feel safe at crying and letting it out because they get sympathy and concern rather than total rejection. Karen Keeper may choke up or sob. She may cry briefly. She may have a two-hour jag. Her display may be public or private. For some people, tears are their only outlet for anger. Who is the Karen Keeper in your family? number four. Randy Revenger likes to vent his anger by getting even. You've probably seen that bumper sticker. I don't get mad, I just get even. The revenger simply waits for an opportunity to gain the revenge, and then they enjoy it. I'm not one of these people. At times I have planned revenge, but I could never go through with it because I couldn't get that joyous sensation of enjoying watching someone else suffer, no matter how ugly they were to me. They file away who did what to them. And in time, they will make that person pay, and pay big. Revengers believe the offender is responsible and thus deserving of what the revenger is now doing to get even. After all, he brought it on himself. I'm only getting even. Randy Revenger tries to tell the target person what's going to be done to him. I mean, they announce it before they do it. Men like to use this approach. Not all men, but it's more men than women. They tend to feel comfortable with it as an instrument of justice. Who is the I'll get even person in your family? The actual ways we respond, expressing our anger, will affect our coworkers and our families. Unfortunately, most of these responses are destructive. They bring discord into the office and the home. They leave these emotions behind. Insecurity, fear, bitterness. The office and the home become dysfunctional. Now, we all know one of these people called the avenging angel. Avenging, A-V-E-N-G-I-N-G. He does not merely express anger, but attempts to dominate and crush others. You've seen these people in public and in church. I hate to see a parent verbally crushing their child in front of dozens of other people because they made a sinful mistake. They spilled a glass of milk at the dinner table, and there's company there, and they go, "Why, you stupid kid!" You know, and they start in and make a major thing out of just crushing this child's spirit. You'll see them in restaurants and in supermarkets and amusement parks and church. Their anger is meant to demean others. My thought is, if they respond like this in public, my goodness, what do they do at home? What do they do at home? Avengers have a multitude of weapons available to them, but their number one weapon is toxic words.
How do you spell demean?
Demean, D-E-M-E-A-N. Toxic words is one of their main tools. They are frequently cruel, caustic, bitter, degrading, judgmental. Their verbal missiles are targeted to contaminate and to wound. In James 3:8, it says, "The human tongue can be tamed by no man. It is an undisciplined, irreconcilable, restless evil, full of death-bringing poison." Wow. It can get out of control. Avengers have an addiction. I want you to know this. They enjoy and continually seek discord through anger. If you are a Christian and you are an avenger, you're in serious spiritual trouble. Another tactic of anger is called the critic. But I can't just give you one definition for a critic. I have to break it down because there are different kinds of critics. Here they say,
I have so many words and stuff on this paper.
Well, whatever you need, God will lock into you, okay? Critics are much more common than avengers. Thank God. But critics come in many different varieties. Number one, the blamers. Blamers, B-L-A-M-E-R-S. They avoid accepting responsibility for anything. It is not my fault. It never will be my fault. You've heard those kind of people. But they avoid the response of accepting responsibility for their action by criticizing other people or blaming past experiences for their failures. Their anger is definitely directed outward. There's no inward critic. They are always looking to nail somebody else for causing their problem or their misfortune or their misbehavior. They vent their anger by criticizing you for what you did wrong and for what you could have done better. And their vocabulary goes something like this. You should have known better. You should have done it my way. You shouldn't have said that. Okay? The next negative critic is the angry joker. The angry joker. Humor is a positive method of relating to other people. Everybody likes humor. I like to laugh. You like to laugh. I like to joke. You like to joke. If something is funny, even in a serious context, I have difficulty containing my laughter. I need to give you an expression of this. I shared with Dee on Sunday. I didn't feel like I could share this with her before. But I said it's bothered me that on the viewing of Jean at the mortuary, we waited till the last day and the last half hour he was going to be viewed. And John had just gotten out of the hospital, was not feeling real well. And so he decided to stay home, being he was doing the funeral the next day. And I thought, well, I'll represent the family. And Bobby and Dave went down, oh, I'd say about 5-6 minutes. They left the house before I did. And when I got to the mortuary, their car wasn't there. I didn't understand what took place. I parked my car and told the mortician that I was there to see Gene Butler. And he took me over to this door that was closed. And he opened the door, and he pushed me inside and pulled the door shut. And this room was just a small cubicle. All that was in there was the casket and two chairs right up to the casket. and I had this funny feeling. I was in there alone, and when I came in, I was kind of like this. I kind of looked around, and then I backed my head up over and looked at Gene. And he was smiling. It struck me so funny. I started laughing. And the mortician was right outside the door. And he knew I was the pastor's wife. And the more I tried to contain his laughter, the louder it got. And I know he must have been thinking, she wanted him to die. I love this man. I was there when he died. I bawled my eyes out, you know. But I never expected to see him smiling, and it struck me so much. And then I couldn't even move. I was just kind of looking backwards. And then I thought, well, what am I supposed to say to Gene, you know? And I said, you won't be offended, Gene. You understand. And then I looked at his eyes. It looked like he was kind of like winking when I was shut a little more than the other. And just the whole moment was just funny to me. And I walked out and tried to get on my serious face, but it was very hard. And I'm smiling all the way out to the car, you know, and I thought, that is the weirdest experience I've ever had. And I don't think I'll ever share this with Dee. But we were talking, and she had a similar experience when she came to view the body. She was not expecting to see a smile on Jean's face. And when she looked down, and the mortician's standing right here, and she looked at him, she said, I laughed. I said, you you don't know what you have released in me. I have got to tell you my story. So everybody enjoys humor, even if it's at, you know, at a serious moment. But the angry joker makes others the butt of their humor. They specialize in laughing at people instead of laughing with them. Their facial expressions carry, and their voice intonation carry the bar so well. You know what I mean? Sometimes I see husbands who subtly criticize their partner's characteristics, their skills, their weaknesses, by joking about them in public. And if there's one thing I do not have patience with, it's that. When I see mates cutting each other down in a humorous way in public, making fun of their weaknesses or their shortcomings. Let me give you an example here. Now, this would probably cause a roar of laughter, but you got to think about the words. A husband was at a dinner party, and he said, "My wife serves hamburger for dinner so often that I'm thinking about erecting golden arches in the front yard." And when you think about that, it's funny until you start thinking about what's in the sentence. Maybe she's doing the best she can with what he brings home. Maybe she's not the world's best cook, and she doesn't know how to plan meals, and she feels safe with hamburger. This may be anger masquerading as humor. When you confront the joker about his or her stinging humor, the reply is often like this. And I confront. My husband has a wild sense of humor, you know that. And sometimes it's not funny. And there's an underlying message there if you're listening. And I have come to the place years ago. But when you confront someone with stinging humor like that, they'll say like, "Oh, take it easy. I was just kidding. Can't you take a joke?" Well, in Proverbs 26:18-19, it says, and this is from another translation, "Like a madman shooting firebrands or deadly arrows is a man who deceives his neighbor and says, 'I was only joking.'" You know that the humor was just camouflage for something else. The third kind of humor, or the third kind of critic is the fault finder. This person seems to have an insatiable need to point out the faults in other people. Now, I don't, none of us do this, but we do know people who do. Many fault finders, now this may come as a real blow, are perfectionists. But flaw finders are only interested in revealing the faults of others. They scrutinize people. They see things and details that nobody else sees. And they remember everything, every little minute detail. They have a great filing system. They like to nitpick and show off defects. And when they find these things in people, they display them like trophies. And you know what's maddening about a person like this? They usually do it with a smile. "I'm just trying to be helpful." If it seems you can never please this person, you're right. You can never please this person. Her critical eye will always be there. Often this display of anger is coming from the need to always be in control. If you confront her about her anger, you will receive two responses. Shock. Denial. They don't even know it is a form of anger. Okay, the fourth kind of critic is the cannibal. These people don't criticize in a joking manner or settle for mere nitpicking. They go right for the juggler, you know what I mean? They devour people, coworkers, family members. They attack through the most severe forms of personal criticism and put downs with complete disregard for the feelings of others. On their facial expressions, they reflect their anger. You've heard their biting remarks. What an idiot you are. You made 7 mistakes on your spelling test. How could you be so stupid? That's the way they talk to their kids. A husband might say, another disaster for dinner. I wished your mother would have taught you how to cook before I married you. A wife might say, you're late for work again. Well, at least you're consistent. Proverbs 12:18 says, the cannibals are the perfection, or the personification. The cannibals are the personification of Proverbs 12:18. There is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of the sword. And that's the New American Translation. Powerful, isn't it? Okay. What time is it?
12:05.
What time?
12:05.
I'm going to have to continue this next week. I wanted to get through all this material, but I'm not going to be able to. What I want you to do this week, I'm going to pass out an anger log. Okay? No, this is not from the anger book if you're one of my people who are in my anger management program. This is something new, which I will be including in my anger management program. Okay, very good. It's called My Anger Log. Now, Elizabeth, maybe you can pass this out to everybody.
You never did give one.